for you to finish or how much you're able to focus. I know you're really busy. Is there a different time we could schedule our meetings that might be better for you? 23. Your cube mate wears perfume you're allergic to. If you're sensitive to the fragrance a coworker wears, if it gives you headaches, makes it hard for you to breathe, or otherwise makes your office environment a physically uncomfortable one, you'll need to say something. Your interest in being able to work without physical discomfort trumps someone else's desire to smell like roses or patchouli or musk. The key is to make it clear that you're not passing judgment on your coworker's fragrance or implying that she's doing something rude. The scent just happens to be one that triggers your allergies. For example, your perfume is lovely, but it seems to be triggering my allergies and giving me headaches. I'm so sorry to ask, but would you be willing to leave it off at the office? I'm so sorry about this, but I am highly allergic to some fragrances and your perfume seems to be setting off my allergies. I know this is a lot to ask, but would you be willing to help me out by not wearing it in the office? 24. You're being pressured to donate money toward a coworker's gift. Your coworker is getting married, or retiring, or having a baby, or a birthday. And hurrah, you're being asked to contribute money to buy gifts for all of these occasions. To some extent, chipping in small amounts of money for social occasions like these every now and then is part of working in an office with other people. It's a thing that happens. But sometimes the practice goes horribly wrong, and people start getting pressured to donate constantly and/or to donate unreasonable amounts of money. If you're being pressured to donate more than you can afford or want to give, it's okay to speak up and say no. Here's how to say it. I'm sorry, it's not in my budget right now. I am stretched pretty thin right now, but I'd be glad to sign a card. I can't contribute right now, but it's really nice of you to take the lead on organizing something for Callista. I can donate $5, but my budget won't let me contribute more than that. If others feel the same, maybe we could buy a less expensive gift or just get a card. 25. You're being pressured to donate to a workplace charity drive you don't support. Workplaces generally mean well when they organize charity drives, but too often they forget that participation should be strictly voluntary and wind up inappropriately pressuring people to donate. You aren't a cheapskate or a jerk if you don't want to contribute to a particular collection. Your money is yours, and you get to decide how to use it. But if you're on the receiving end of high-pressure tactics to get you to donate, try any of these. My budget won't allow me to contribute right now. I already allocated my charity budget for the year. It's a great cause, but I can't. No, thank you. That said, if you're working in a culture where opting out will impact you professionally, which shouldn't be the case, but sometimes is, then it might make sense to donate a few dollars and consider it the price you pay to make the pressure go away. Sometimes that's the sensible option, even if it grates on principle. My coworker stole donations from a gift collection. A reader writes, "One of my coworkers collected donations for Boss's Day gifts for our project manager and assistant project manager. But over a month after the holiday, a gift had not been given. This person's excuse was that she kept forgetting. A lot of people kept asking her about it. I know I asked 2 times. Still though, no gifts. We finally told the assistant project manager, and he went up to her and asked about the donations and where the gift for our project manager was. She made an excuse and said that she decided to save that money for a Christmas gift for them instead. Well, she never informed us of her change in plans. So a week later, she gives our manager a handmade item she bought. This is not what we agreed on. We don't know how much she collected for 2 gifts, but what I gave was way more than the 1 gift, so basically she kept a lot of money. I know we will never trust this person with money again. What should we do, or can we do? You should tell her clearly and firmly, preferably with the rest of the people who donated, that you want an accounting of how the money was spent, including a receipt, and that you want the remainder returned. If it helps to have specific language, I'd start by saying this. It seems like there must be money left over from the gift purchase. Can you show us the receipt for the final cost so we can figure out how to divide up and return the money that was left over? And unless she makes this right immediately after that, you should give your boss a heads up about what happened, because stealing from coworkers is a serious thing. 26. Your coworker keeps touching you, and you are not into it. In theory, you probably know that you don't have to let yourself be touched by a coworker, that your right to not be touched takes precedence over the other person's interest in hugging you, rubbing your shoulders, or putting an arm around you. But in reality, it can be tough to tell someone, "Quit touching me," without worrying that you're implying, "I think you're a pervert," which may or may not be what you really mean, and which you might reasonably worry would impact the working relationship. Because of that, a lot of people put up with unwanted touching. But this doesn't have to be a super awkward conversation that harms the relationship. As your opening salvo, try saying this: "Oh, I'm not a toucher." Say it cheerfully and briskly, and then immediately move on to something work-related, and it's likely that the toucher will get the message and appreciate your handling of it. However, and this is important, if the toucher turns this back on you and acts like you're the problem, or if the touching continues after this, then that person is a problem. At that point, you should stop worrying about introducing tension into the relationship. He is the one introducing that tension by ignoring your clearly stated wishes, and at that point, you should have no qualms about escalating. Escalating might mean icily delivering this: "As I said, please don't touch me." Or it might mean pulling in someone above you, depending on the circumstances. And of course, we're talking here about non-sexual touching. If it's sexual, skip straight to "get your hands off me" and report that crap. 27. Turning down a coworker who asks you out. Rejecting a coworker who asks you out can be a lot more awkward than rejecting someone outside of work, because you're going to continue to see each other every day. The best thing to do is to be straightforward and as normal as possible afterward. Most people will take their cues from you, so if you act like everything is still fine and normal, it's likely to ease much of the other person's awkwardness. On the other hand, if you're acting uncomfortable, the other person is likely to respond in kind. As for what to say, try any of these: "Thank you, but I'd rather keep things between us professional." "Thank you for the invitation. I'm not interested in dating, but I enjoy working with you." "Thank you, but I don't date coworkers." This one has the potential for awkwardness if you do later end up dating a different coworker. You're allowed to change your mind, of course, but factor that in if you choose it. 28. Your coworker asks you to keep a secret from your boss that you're uncomfortable keeping. If your coworker asks you to keep a secret from your boss, it might be no big deal to agree if the secret is, say, "I think this strategy is silly," or "I really just needed a day off for my mental health." But sometimes agreeing would put you in a really uncomfortable or even untenable situation. Like if your coworker said, "I'm stealing from the company," or "I'm going to keep asking out that intern who keeps saying no." If you find yourself in possession of knowledge that you feel ethically required to share, usually the best thing to do is to be honest about that. You can say it this way: "I'm in a difficult position here. This is the kind of thing I'm obligated to bring to Cicely's attention if I know about it. I want to be transparent with you that I feel I have to share this with her. I'm sorry that's the case. I know you intended to confide in me, but I hope you can see why it puts me in a tough spot. Would you prefer to talk to her about it yourself?" 29. Your coworkers invite you to frequent social events that you don't want to attend. If you work with a group of people who often socialize together outside of work, it can feel awkward to keep turning down invitation after invitation. You don't want your coworkers to think you don't like them, but you also might prefer to keep a boundary between your work life and your social life. If that's the case, try one of these responses: "Hey, I really appreciate your inviting me to this stuff. I usually have other plans in the evenings. I tend to go straight home after work. I'm not one for happy hours. But thank you for thinking of me. I hope you all have a great time there." "You're so nice to invite me to these things. I tend to like to have a separation between work and the rest of my life, so I generally won't take you up on these invitations, but I really appreciate your including me in them." 30. Setting boundaries with a coworker who wants more of a friendship than you do. When a coworker wants a closer friendship than you'd prefer, like hanging out outside of work, calling you in the evenings, or otherwise moving the relationship from friendly coworkers to real-life friends, declining politely is tricky. When someone you know socially wants a closer relationship than you do, it's easier to set boundaries and limit the amount of interaction that you have. But with a coworker, you're likely to have regular interaction whether you want to or not, and that makes most of the usual signals for "I don't like you that way" much harder to send. That leaves you with two options. You can rely on hints and cues, or you can be direct. Relying on hints and cues sounds like a cop-out, but in this context, it can be kinder if it gets the message across without hurting the person's feelings. The key, and it is a very, very important key, is that if you see that hints and cues aren't working, you switch tactics. But you can start with hints and cues and see if that solves the problem. My schedule is packed right now, so I'm not able to hang out outside of work. I'm not able to email much during the day because I'm usually on deadline. Sorry, I'm swamped right now and can't really talk. I have a lot of work right now, so I can't be social. But if you do that a handful of times and your coworker is still pushing you to come to happy hour every night, spend an hour chatting with him at work, and so forth, then it's kinder to be more direct. I like going to happy hour sometimes, but for me, it's a once every few months thing, and I'm not up for it more often than that. I got your message asking me to hang out last weekend. To be honest, I like to keep a separation between my work life and my personal life, so I don't do much socializing with coworkers. But that art show you were going to sounds really cool, and I hope you had a great time. Be warm and cheerful in your tone, and you'll probably be able to successfully assert and maintain the boundaries you want. My coworker wants us to call her boyfriend her master. A reader writes, "An employee, Sally, started at our workplace about a year and a half ago. She's not my subordinate, but she is the subordinate of a peer of mine and works frequently with my subordinates. A few months later, she got a new boyfriend, Peter. I found out about this through normal water cooler type conversation. After she'd been with the company a few more months, she invited her boyfriend to our holiday party. This is totally normal in our workplace. Everything there seemed fine as well, although at one point Peter asked Sally to get him a drink, to which she replied, 'Yes, master,' in a very I dream of genie kind of way. We all laughed it off as a joke, and it didn't come up again until it did. We had an early summer party in late May, which Sally and Peter both attended. At this party, there was a good deal more of Peter ordering Sally around and Sally calling him master. He sent her to fetch drinks and hot dogs. He told her to find a place for them to sit, etc., to which she replied consistently, 'Yes, master.' It made a number of people, myself included, clearly uncomfortable, but there was nothing objectively abusive about it. He never yelled at her or threatened her. And her immediate supervisor and her supervisor's supervisor weren't there, and so no one said anything, perhaps incorrectly. After the party, at the office, I overheard a conversation in which one of her coworker friends was like, 'So, what's up with the master thing?' And she explained that she was in a 24/7 dominant submissive relationship, and he wasn't her boyfriend or her significant other or her partner. He was her master, and he needed to be referred to as such. Her coworker was clearly flummoxed and didn't have much response to that. Later, I heard her correct someone who referred to her boyfriend as her partner, saying that he wasn't her partner, he was her master, and should be referred to using his appropriate title. She compared it to gay rights, saying that if she was a man, they wouldn't erase her relationship by referring to Peter as Patricia. And so they shouldn't erase the dominant submissive relationship by calling him a partner instead of a master. It's pretty clear that her coworkers aren't comfortable asking, 'Will your master be at the end of summer barbecue?' Or 'Did you and your master do anything fun this weekend?' though, and thus have just stopped referring to Peter at all. Her direct boss, my colleague, is baffled as to how to sensitively address this issue. My instinct is that there's a very big difference between insisting that colleagues acknowledge that you're in a gay relationship and insisting that they refer to your partner as your master, and that it borders on involving other non-consenting parties in your relationship. But I can't really articulate why. For what it's worth, I'm a bisexual woman, and our office has a number of gay, lesbian, trans, and poly individuals, so it's not an issue of being against non-traditional relationships. It just seems to be very important to Sally that Peter be referred to as her master, and it seems equally clear that her coworkers find this intensely uncomfortable. Help! How can I advise my colleague? What's reasonable in this situation? Whoa. Yeah, your coworkers definitely don't need to refer to Peter as Sally's master, and she's wildly out of line to request or expect it. What Sally is asking for is indeed akin to involving non-consenting parties in their sex life and in their relationship. Even if she wanted to argue that the term isn't a sexual one, which is a bit of a stretch, she's still insisting that people participate in a dynamic of her relationship with Peter that they haven't signed up to be a part of. That may become more intuitive if you consider that there isn't actually any need here for a label more specific than partner, or, you know, even just Peter. Partner is a conveniently generic term that covers a whole spectrum of possibilities. Boyfriend, girlfriend, spouse, long-term companion, asexual mate, and so forth. There's no need to use a term that describes the dynamic between them so specifically. After all, imagine if you had a coworker who insisted that people identify her partner as her lover. It's too much information. It's not needed. And it's understandably going to make people uncomfortable. The lover comparison works particularly nicely, since anyone insisting on it would come across as just as self-involved as Sally is here. And to be clear, Sally's behavior is self-involved, making a point of describing the inner workings of your relationship to colleagues and insisting that they use very specific, sexually charged language to describe it when a more generic term would do perfectly well, is very much the province of people who are indulging their own urges at the expense of consideration for others. And really, partner should cover it. It might be an unequal partnership, but it's still a partnership. That's why refusing to refer to Peter as Sally's master isn't at all equivalent to refusing to acknowledge gay couples or calling someone who identifies as a man by a woman's name. You're not refusing to recognize the relationship's validity. In fact, by referring to Peter as your coworker's partner, you're inherently recognizing the relationship's validity. No one is being erased. But Sally is asking for more than that. She's asking you to get involved in and play along with a specific dynamic of their relationship. It's entirely reasonable to decline to do that. Whatever she and Peter agree to do together is all well and good. But you and your coworkers don't need to participate in it. And the fact that this is happening at work, as opposed to just in a social situation, gives this a whole additional layer of weirdness and discomfort. It would be odd enough if Sally were just doing this socially, but it's infinitely weirder and more disturbing that she's making it a thing at work, where people normally have stronger boundaries than this, where she has something of a captive audience, and where people feel pressure not to cause tension in their relationships with her. So, should her boss, your friend, say something to her about it? Probably, especially if it's making people uncomfortable, as of course it is. If Sally pushes back with the gay rights comparison again, her manager can point out that everyone is happy to acknowledge her relationship with Peter, but they're going to use the term partner as they do with everyone else, gay, straight, poly, or any other relationship category. 31. Explaining that you don't friend coworkers on social media. People have all sorts of preferences for whether and how they connect with coworkers on social media. Some people will connect on LinkedIn, but not on Facebook, because they want to preserve boundaries between work and the rest of their life, while others are perfectly comfortable connecting anywhere. Either choice is legitimate, but if you're in the first group, you may occasionally run into a coworker who wants to know why you haven't accepted her Facebook friend request. One option, of course, is to accept the friend request and then adjust your privacy settings so that no one from work can see your posts. But if you'd rather not do that, try one of these. Oh, I'm old-fashioned about Facebook. It's been drilled into me to keep professional and personal stuff separate. Let's connect if one of us moves to another company, though. I'm hardly ever on Facebook anymore. I really just use it to see photos of my nieces and nephews. Let's connect on LinkedIn, though. These options work for your boss, too, not just peers. 32. Asking a coworker to stop texting you outside work hours. If a coworker is blowing up your phone with texts when you're not even at work and you want it to stop, here are two ways to say it. Getting texts in the evening is making it hard for me to disconnect from work. Would you hold these until the workday? I'd really appreciate it. I try to unplug from work once I'm home at night. If you need to send me something after work hours, would you send it to my email rather than texting? That way I'll see it when I'm back in work mode. Thank you. 33. Your coworker is trying to get you to take sides in a dispute and you don't want to be involved. People disagree about things at work, and that's normal. But you're not obligated to take sides in a dispute that you have no particular stake in. Most coworkers will respect that stance. But if a coworker pressures you to take sides in a disagreement that you'd prefer to stay out of, here are some things you can say. My working relationship with each of you is important to me, so I'm sitting this one out. I can see both sides. I prefer to stay out of it, though. Thanks for respecting that. I can see that you're upset, and I'm sorry this is happening. I have to work with both of you, though, so I can't take sides. That sounds really tough, but I don't think I'm the right person to weigh in here. I'm sorry I can't help. 34. You accidentally trash-talked someone who was CC'd on an email. Everyone warns about this happening, and yet somehow you never think it will happen to you. Until the moment you feel the gut punch of realizing you just sent an email complaining about a coworker to that very coworker. What to do? Take responsibility and apologize. It's going to be awkward for both of you, but it's the right thing to do, and it's going to be less awkward than letting it fester for weeks or months. For example, I need to apologize to you for the email I just sent. My comment was unkind, and I'm embarrassed by it. I'm very sorry for what I said. If your trash talking was rooted in a legitimate work concern that you haven't addressed with the person directly, this might be the time to suck it up and do that. For example, I need to apologize to you for the email I sent earlier today. I made an unkind comment about how you handled the X project. I was blowing off steam, but it's no excuse. The reality is, I was frustrated by how late the assignment came to me, and I wished I'd had more advance notice. But I should have talked with you directly about that, not complained to someone else. 35. You got drunk at the company holiday party. So you drank too much at a company event. Maybe you had an empty stomach and misjudged what you could handle. Or maybe your nerves got the better of you. Or maybe you just threw caution to the wind and overindulged. Whatever the reason, in addition to your splitting headache and the spinning room, you're now facing the terrible realization that your coworker saw you dancing on tables, slurring your words, ranting drunkenly like a loon. Hey, it could be worse. I once received a letter from someone who got drunk at the company holiday party and punched his boss. Hopefully you didn't do that. If you embarrassed yourself, the best thing to do is to confront the situation head on. Acknowledge to the people you had the most interaction with, as well as your boss if she observed you, that you had too much to drink. Say that you'll exercise more control in the future, and if you think you made anyone uncomfortable, apologize. For example, I'm mortified about my behavior at the party on Friday. I didn't realize that I'd had too much to drink, but clearly I did. I'm so sorry if I made you or anyone else uncomfortable, and I won't be drinking at company events in the future. Also, if there is an easy explanation for what happened, like that you hadn't realized you were drinking on an empty stomach, it can be smart to mention that too, so that people have some context for what happened. My coworker keeps burping loudly. A reader writes, "My department is pretty quiet. Most of the floor is waist-high cubes, i.e. no privacy, so we're all fairly considerate of each other. Earbuds for music, taking personal calls out to the stairwell, etc. There's a line of small offices with doors down one side of the room. Our new IT help desk guy has been installed in one of the offices. In most ways, he's a huge improvement over the last couple of help deskers we've had. Reasonably friendly, seems to know what he's doing, gets things done. The problem? He belches. Daily. Horrid, long, loud, disgusting belches. Even with his office door closed, some days it's downright nauseating. I don't know how to approach him about it. His supervisor is in a different building altogether. Our HR department is one overworked person who mostly deals with hiring and benefits. I don't want to be a jerk about it, but it's getting disruptive and something's got to change. Any ideas? It's possible that it's a medical problem, in which case there likely isn't anything he can do about it. But it might not be medical at all, and you don't need to assume that it is without first talking to him. I'd say it this way. Hey, I don't know if you realize that when you burp, we can hear it out here. It's pretty distracting. Anything you can do to control it, or at least keep it quieter? 36. Your coworker makes bigoted remarks. If you have a coworker who makes racist, homophobic, or otherwise bigoted remarks, there are a lot of work-appropriate ways to say, "That's unwelcome, and I don't want to hear it." Here are some options you can try. "I hope you're not saying that because you think I agree with you." "I find that really offensive. Please don't say that sort of thing around me." "I feel very differently about this subject than you do, and I don't want to hear this kind of thing at work. Please stop." Comments like that are offensive to most people and unwelcome at work. I don't want to hear comments like that. If your bigot responds by saying the comments aren't that bad, that you're being too sensitive, or really anything other than agreeing to stop, say this. "Again, I'm telling you that those comments are unwelcome here, and they expose the company to legal liability under federal harassment laws, so I really need you to stop." If that doesn't work, your next step should be to talk to your boss or HR, because your coworker really is creating legal liability for your company, and they'll want to stop it. Frankly, you'd be justified in going directly to HR if you want to, particularly if the remarks are way over the line. But in many cases, HR will ask you whether you asked the person to stop, and it's helpful to be able to say yes. 37. Your coworker subjects you to constant political talk. In social situations, you can usually avoid bores who try to force you to listen to unwelcome political rants. At work, it's often much harder, since you're a captive audience. And on top of that, you have the pressure of not wanting to add tension into a working relationship. But that doesn't mean that you're stuck engaging in political discussions against your will. You just need to be willing to ask, politely but assertively, for it to stop. For example, "I'd rather not discuss politics at work. Thanks for understanding." "Oh, I'm so sick of politics. Let's discuss something else." "I have a rule that I don't discuss politics at work, but did you hear there's going to be a donut truck in the parking lot tomorrow morning?" If the person continues after that, then you escalate in firmness. "I'm banning political discussions between us. Seriously, please stop." "I'm not willing to discuss this with you. Please stop. Anyway, can you tell me the status of the new product flyer?" If direct requests don't work, then pointedly changing the subject, especially to something work-related, or even finding a reason to leave the room, like grabbing something from the printer or heading to the kitchen, will usually short-circuit the bore. 38. Responding to unwelcome religious talk. If your coworker asks whether you've been saved, or insists on knowing the details of your religious faith or lack thereof, or otherwise tries to pull you into a religious conversation that you'd prefer not to have at work, the best thing you can do is to be direct. "I prefer not to discuss religion at work. Thanks for understanding." A big advantage to this approach is that it will be immediately clear whether the person is going to be respectful of you or not. A reasonable person, upon hearing this, will back off immediately. An unreasonable person will not. If you're dealing with an unreasonable person who keeps imposing religious talk on you after you've told him to stop, at that point you should talk to your manager or HR, since in the United States, employers have a legal obligation to ensure that employees aren't subjected to religious harassment. When escalating it, you'd use these words. I've asked Logan to stop discussing religion with me, but he has insisted on continuing. Can you please ensure that I'm able to work without religious harassment? 39. Your older coworker keeps trying to parent you. If you are a youngish person in the work world, you may run into an older colleague whose interactions with you feel more like a parent-child dynamic than a normal coworker dynamic. Sometimes this shows up as an overly familiar interest in your health, your dates, your diet, or even whether you've dressed appropriately for the weather. If the comments are pretty mild, you might choose to just let them go or reply with a dry, "Thanks, I've got it." But if the comments are frequent or you feel that they're undermining your ability to be taken seriously at work, speak up. For example, coworker, "You're so adorable, and I'd love to see you find the right man. I think if you took more care with your hair and your clothes, you'd have men lining up." You, "I'd rather not discuss my appearance or my dating life at work. Thanks." If it makes it easier for you to say, you can begin with, "I know it comes from a kind place, but..." Coworker, "Don't forget a warm jacket. It's cold outside." You, "You've reminded me a few times, and I promise you I'm able to take care of that myself. I wouldn't bring it up, except I've noticed you don't remind anyone but me, and I wouldn't want anyone thinking I'm less self-sufficient than anyone else here. Thanks for understanding." Coworker, "That meeting on health insurance today was probably pretty overwhelming. Why don't I talk you through it?" You, "I'm not sure if you realize how differently you treat me than the rest of our colleagues. I'm assuming it's because I'm younger, so this is me asking you to treat me the way you would any other colleague, rather than like a young person who needs your assistance." 40. Your coworker keeps asking you for rides to or from work. I get a surprising number of letters at Ask a Manager from people whose coworkers won't stop asking for car rides. Often this is because the person willingly offered once or twice, but doesn't want to be the colleague's regular mode of transportation. Frustratingly, the more you've said yes, the harder it can feel to say no. But you can reclaim your private time in your car if you want to. The easiest way to get out of being your coworker's chauffeur is by having other obligations that the rides will interfere with. "I won't be able to drive you anymore because I'm starting to do more things after work that take me in a different direction. I'm going to start dropping my spouse off in the mornings, so I can't pick you up anymore. I've been cutting it too close on some after-work commitments, so I won't be able to drive you anymore." Frankly, it's also okay to just explain that you value the alone time if you're comfortable saying that. "I'm finding that I really need alone time before or after work to recharge, so I'm not exhausted later in the day. Thanks for understanding." Keep in mind that if your coworker has been depending on you for rides regularly, it might be kind to give an advance heads up a week or so before you want to change the routine, so that the person has time to make other arrangements. 41. You got a promotion that your coworker wanted. As excited as you might be about your new promotion, it can be tricky knowing what to say to a coworker who wanted the job herself. Rather than staying silent out of discomfort, addressing it head on and saying something kind will often diffuse some of the awkwardness. "I know you were interested in the job too. I want to say that I think you're really talented, and I know you would have done a good job." 42. Your coworker is rude to you, or otherwise a jerk. If a coworker is a jerk to you, repeatedly rude, dismissive, or otherwise disrespectful, sometimes calling out the behavior calmly and kindly can make the person realize she's out of line and that you're not going to just lie down and take it. I used almost this exact wording once when talking to a coworker who was quick to get frustrated and throw snark around. "I like working with you, but I don't know if you realize how you talk to me sometimes. You can come across like you don't want to listen to what I have to say, or you don't value my opinions. It can make working together pretty tricky." Another option: "It sounds like you're frustrated, and I know this is aggravating, but you're using a pretty aggressive tone here that's making it hard to sort through this." You may not even need to say that much. Sometimes, especially in the face of open rudeness, it can be just as effective to give the person a pointed or even disappointed look and say something like, Wow, I hope you didn't mean that the way it sounded. Whoa, what's going on? Where did that come from? 43. Your coworker took credit for your idea. If your coworker takes credit for your ideas, don't stand by helplessly. Speak up and tell him that you want him to stop. It's possible that he doesn't realize he's doing this, in which case pointing it out should be the nudge he needs. And if it's intentional, being called out on it should make it harder for him to do in the future. If it happens once. Hey, the idea you shared with Lillian earlier is the one I suggested in our meeting yesterday. I'm sure you didn't mean to imply it was yours, but going forward, can you make sure to attribute stuff like that to the person it came from so that Lillian knows how we're all contributing? If it's a pattern. I've noticed that when I mention ideas to you, you'll often present them to Lillian without noting that they came from me. I want her to know what I'm contributing, so going forward, would you let me share my ideas with her myself? And if you see it happening in the moment, jump in and take the lead in the conversation. That's actually the idea I was explaining to Jaime before this meeting. My thinking about it is... 44. Your coworker seems upset with you, but you don't know why. If a coworker who's previously been friendly suddenly seems upset with you, and you're not sure why, you have two options. Ignore it or say something. Sometimes the right move can simply be to ignore it. Give the person her space and carry on cheerfully and professionally. Particularly at work, where you might not want to get into a big discussion about emotions. And often this approach lets the person work things out internally in her own time. But there are other times where you might want to ask what's going on, especially if you think you might have hurt or offended your colleague in some way. In that case, try one of these. I get the sense that I may have done something to upset you. If so, I'd want to try to make it right. I've noticed we're not talking the way we used to. Have I done something to upset you? I'm afraid I may have inadvertently done something that upset you. If so, I'm really sorry about that. Can we clear the air? 45. You're not inviting your coworkers to your wedding. If you talk at all to your coworkers about your life, they're likely to know about it when you're getting married. And because lots of people like to talk about weddings, it can be easy to share so many details about your plans that it can then feel awkward to say, "Oh, but you're not invited." Know that you're not obligated to invite coworkers to your wedding. If you want to, great. But if you don't, it's okay to say something like, "We're keeping it small, so we can't invite coworkers, unfortunately. We've got big families, so we're really limited on non-family invitations, unfortunately. I wish we could invite everyone here, but we've got restrictions from the venue." The idea is to offer up an explanation that isn't, "We don't like you enough." Most people understand that couples getting married face some restrictions on how many people they can invite. So if you put it in those terms, you should be able to avoid hard feelings. I accidentally hugged the CEO. A reader writes, "Today, as I was arriving at work, I got to the door of the building just before the CEO. I was holding the door for him, and he reached over me. I assumed to take the door and hold it open for me. I'm a woman, and I don't know, chivalry? Anyway, my brain interpreted this as him going in for a hug. The reflex to hug back came quicker than the realization that greeting coworkers with a hug in the morning is not something people do. We both just pretended it hadn't happened and made small talk as we walked toward the elevator. How embarrassed should I be about this? Is continuing to pretend it never happened a valid option for handling it going forward? I'm friendly with him, but we don't really know each other well. He was involved in hiring me for a fairly junior position I've been in for 6 months, and a few months ago, we had a running joke that's since died out, but we don't work together day-to-day at all. Possibly also relevant, it's a very laid-back company, a jeans and t-shirt kind of place. Oh, this is totally something that would happen to me, and then I would feel burning mortification for days. Ideally, you would have made a joke about it in the moment. oh my God, I don't know where that came from. I'm on autopilot this morning. And laughed it off together. But of course, handling it well in the moment isn't easy, especially when you're consumed by wondering, what the hell did I just do? So you could do what I do when I'm dwelling on something with embarrassment later. Say something about it now. It means having to deal with the additional awkwardness of having a conversation about it. But I'm always so much happier to have corrected whatever mistaken impression I'm worried about. And I actually think people can find stuff like this endearing if you do it with the right amount of humor and self-deprecation. So the next time I saw him, I'd say something like, I think I may have hugged you in the elevator the other morning. I was in a morning fog, and I have no idea how that happened. I have been mortified ever since, so I felt I had to say something about it. I would then immediately feel 10 times better, because even though we would now have had 2 awkward interactions, it would be worth the price to let him know I wasn't just randomly hugging him. You may not feel that way, though. If doing that sounds unbearable to you, you might prefer to just let it go and use it as an embarrassing story to entertain others with. And if your company was the sort where you rarely encountered him, it might make more sense to go that route anyway. And hell, maybe tell yourself that he's mortified because he thinks that you think he initiated a hug and that you felt pressured to go along with it. 46. When a coworker loses a loved one. A lot of people struggle with what to say to someone who has just experienced a devastating loss. They feel they have to come up with just the right comforting words, or they worry that mentioning the death will somehow remind the person of it, when in reality, there's no danger that they've forgotten about it. Luckily, etiquette has supplied the right words to use in this situation. You don't need to go searching for something creative. And in fact, doing that can backfire pretty terribly if you get it wrong. Stick to this formula. I'm so sorry to hear of your loss. You're in my thoughts. I was so sorry to hear about your mom. What a terrible loss. I wanted to let you know that I'm thinking of you and your family. You can say this in person if you'd like, but you can also put it in a card or even in an email. A surprising number of people don't say anything at all in this situation, out of discomfort, no doubt, and most grieving people are grateful for those who do acknowledge their loss. 47. Sharing difficult personal news with coworkers. Sharing difficult personal news at work, like that you've split up with a spouse or been diagnosed with a serious illness, can be tricky. You might not want to invite conversation about a painful topic or deal with the weird ways that some people react to bad news. Assuming that you want to keep things low-key at work, the best approach here is to be fairly matter-of-fact. For example, if someone asks about your spouse, you might simply say, "Actually, Xavier and I are splitting up." Your coworker will then presumably express concern and sadness, and you can then say, "Thank you. It's a tough time, but we're getting through it." Or, "We're both doing okay." Something that assures people that you are, in fact, carrying on, and that they don't need to comfort you if you don't want that. Many people will feel inconsiderate if they don't inquire about what happened or how you're doing. So it can be important to make it explicitly clear if you prefer they not ask. Most people will understand that responses like, "I'm doing fine and staying focused on work," signal, "Let's not talk about it." But for people who don't get the hint, you can be more direct. "It's not something I want to get into at work, but I'm doing fine." Even if you're not actually doing fine, this is the way to go if you want to ward off further conversation. Another option is to enlist someone else to share the news for you. That person could say something like, "Chloe called off her engagement. She's doing fine, but she would appreciate people not asking her about it." 48. Letting your coworkers know you're resigning when you're not yet ready to say where you're going. When you quit your job, it's likely that your coworkers will ask what you'll be doing next. Usually people are comfortable answering that question, but occasionally you might have a reason not to share where you're going. For example, you may have taken a new job with a competitor, or maybe your workplace is so dysfunctional that you don't trust your boss not to badmouth you to your new employer. But because it's such a common thing to discuss, it can come across as weirdly chilly to refuse to say where you're going. You're better off giving a vague answer than an explicit refusal to share the information. For example, you could say, "It's a small company in a different field. I'll be doing similar work to what I've done here, though." If pressed beyond that, you can say, "I'm not ready to give details yet, but once everything's finalized, I'll let people know." 49. What to say to a coworker who just got fired. People who have been fired will tell you that one of the weirdest parts of the experience is how many coworkers never reach out to them to say goodbye. In some cases, even people they worked closely with for years. It happens, of course, because people feel awkward and don't know what to say. If you're struggling with that, a good framework to use is the same one that you'd use with someone who left voluntarily. For example, "I'm sorry to no longer be working with you. I've really valued you as a coworker, and I hope we can stay in touch. Please let me know if there's anything I can do to be helpful as you look for your next role." It's also kind to mention specific things you valued about working with him, especially since he may be feeling really down and would appreciate being reminded of his value. For example, "I've learned so much by watching you handle difficult clients, and I really admire your ability to stay calm and thoughtful in the face of what's sometimes been chaos." It's also okay to say something empathetic about the firing itself, like, "I'm sorry this happened." But generally, you should avoid saying things like, "I don't know what your manager was thinking," or, "They're crazy to let you go," since in most cases, you probably won't know the details of what happened. And firing decisions that are hard to understand from the outside often make a lot more sense when you're privy to all the details. 50. You're not comfortable being a reference for a coworker. If a coworker asks you to be a reference and you don't think you could give her a particularly good review, you have a few options for declining. None of them without awkwardness, I'm sorry to say. Be honest. "I don't think I'm the right person, unfortunately, because of the struggles with X and Y when we worked together. I also know those may not be issues at other jobs, but it means I can't be a really strong reference. I'm sorry I can't help with this." Explain that you can't really characterize her work since you didn't manage her. "I don't think I'd be a great reference since I wasn't in a position to really see your work the way a manager would." Attribute it to the friendship, if there is one. "I'm not comfortable giving references for friends since I know that it biases me and can potentially harm my credibility, which could hurt you with the reference checker." Be vague. "I don't think I'd be the best person for that. I'm sorry." Or, "I'd love to help you in some other way, but I don't think I'd be the right reference." With these, you'll need to be prepared for the coworker to ask why. If she does, you could then use one of the other options on this list. But not everyone will push back and ask why, so it's possible this could get you off the hook. Can I have these conversations through email? Most of the conversations in this book are intended to take place face-to-face, or in some cases over the phone. For example, if you work in a different location than the person you're talking with. For the most part, they aren't ideal for email. Believe me, that pains me to say, because I'd conduct my whole life over email if I could. But when you're raising potentially sensitive or awkward topics, email has real disadvantages. You can't convey tone nearly as precisely as you can in person, and you can't get an immediate sense of the other person's reaction and adjust your approach if need be. In fact, if you're dreading the conversation or it feels uncomfortable to you, that's an indication that the conversation is sufficiently delicate, emotionally charged, or ripe for misinterpretation, that the odds of success are far higher if you talk in person. In those cases, you'll likely need a back-and-forth discussion rather than just one-way message delivery, and you'll want to have maximum control over your tone. But if you do end up using email, keep these guidelines in mind. Be brief. Don't send someone paragraphs upon paragraphs of text. And that's especially important when something is highly charged, since a long email in that context is likely to come across as a rant. Read your email over for tone before you send it. Could it be misread as angry, brusque, or cold? What if the recipient already thought you might not like her? If so, sometimes just changing a few words can soften the tone. It seems silly, but look at the difference between these two emails. Fergus, please come by my office to talk about how yesterday's launch went. Jane. Hi, Fergus. When you have a few minutes, I'd love to talk about how yesterday's launch went. Will you swing by this afternoon when you're free? Thanks, Jane. Pay attention to the communication norms of your particular office and calibrate yourself accordingly. Some offices use email for everything. Others use email only for very straightforward work discussions and move to in-person conversations for everything else. In some offices, very concise, even terse emails are the norm. In others, you'll come across as overly brusque if you don't include more filler. Figuring out and adhering to the norms of your office will increase the chances that your message will be received well. Be ready to switch mediums if email isn't getting you what you want. Don't commit to email so wholeheartedly that you miss cues that you need to try a different medium. If the conversation is becoming heated, or the other person seems annoyed, or if you repeatedly find yourself having to type out long paragraphs of text in reply, that's a sign that you need to pick up the phone or talk in person. And if you've sent a couple of emails to someone and haven't heard back, email isn't working and you need to try a different method. Chapter 3, Conversations When You're the Boss. Here's the thing about being the boss. You have real power, which means that if there's a problem, it's very likely that you have the ability to fix it. You don't need to rely on cajoling or persuading people to do something differently. You have the authority, and in many cases, the obligation, to be straightforward about what you need and to hold people accountable to whatever expectations you set for them. That doesn't mean that you should be a jerk, of course. In fact, it's the opposite of that. Because you have authority and thus a great deal of control over people's livelihoods, you have an obligation to be kind and compassionate. But you need to do that while still setting a high bar for what you need and expect from your staff. The hard part, of course, is figuring out how to balance all of that. Too often, in a quest to be kind, managers will soften their approach so much that their message is lost. But that ends up not being kind at all if it denies an employee the chance to hear what he or she needs to do to excel at work, and in some cases, to stay employed. And on the other end of the spectrum, some managers are so focused on the bottom line that they forget that they're dealing with humans, and that humans tend not to respond well to being treated like automatons. It can be hard to find the sweet spot between those two extremes, so it's not surprising that many managers struggle to do it. But remembering these four principles can help you get there. The kindest thing you can do for your staff members is to be really clear with them. You're going to have tough conversations as a manager. It's part of the job. You might be tempted to put off a difficult conversation or to soften the message. You can't. You will do people a disservice if you're anything other than straightforward, particularly when there are aspects of their performance that you need them to change. If you hesitate to have tough conversations, or if you sugarcoat the message, you make it more likely that people will continue frustrating or disappointing you, and that can have real consequences for them, such as impacting their future raises, promotions, project assignments, reputation, and even tenure in the job. You owe them directness and honesty. Your tone matters a lot. Tone is important with any potentially awkward or sensitive conversation, but it's especially true when you're the boss. Your tone can determine whether someone walks away thinking, "That was hard to hear, but I'm glad we talked," or, "That was horrible, and I want to go hide in the bathroom the rest of the day." The words you use need to be clear and direct, but your tone can still be kind and compassionate. Talk, don't scold. When something goes wrong, managers, and especially newer managers, often think that they need to come down hard on employees. but the vast majority of the time, you don't. Simply talking over what happened, why, and how you'll avoid it in the future is a form of accountability, and it's often all you need to get things back on track, particularly with conscientious employees. What happened and what's going on are handy questions that are often all you need to make the point that you're concerned about something. Certainly, if you find yourself having multiple what happened conversations with the same person, you have a more serious issue on your hands. But you can start off with a lighter touch. With particularly tough or tricky conversations, try writing out talking points and practicing them beforehand. Planning ahead of time can help structure your thoughts and ensure that you hit the key points. And while practicing out loud might feel silly, it can be hugely useful in helping you stick to what you need to say. For example, if you need to warn someone that her job is in jeopardy unless her performance improves, it's really important that you say those actual words and not soften them in the moment. But that's also the hardest part to say. Practicing out loud can get you more comfortable with the language and reduce the chances that you'll dilute the message when you do it for real. 1. You have concerns about someone's work. It can be painful to tell someone his work isn't good enough, but it's essential that you be willing to have that conversation and not put it off. Allowing someone to continue producing mediocre or worse work will impact your team's results, as well as the person's professional reputation, evaluations, and potentially compensation, and even his ability to stay in the job. What to say depends on whether your concerns are project-specific or of a broader nature. If your feedback is specific to one particular project, it's an easier conversation. You can just be straightforward about what needs to be done differently. And you can even treat it as a communication issue more than a work quality issue, since if it's not part of a broader pattern, that's likely the case. For example, I realized that I didn't fully communicate what was in my head on this project. Because this will be seen by a wide audience, it needs to be more polished and provide more background. That means if the problem is broader than that, then what you really need to give feedback on is the pattern, not individual projects. Often when there's a pattern of problems with someone's work, managers keep addressing the individual instances and assume that the employee will connect the dots. But they never explicitly say, hey, this is a pattern. And as a result, sometimes people don't realize that it's a pattern and a serious problem. The basic formula for pattern feedback is this. I've noticed this pattern in your work, and here's what I need instead. For example, we've talked a few times recently about how I need you to do a better job of following through on assignments and making sure that nothing slips through the cracks, but it's still happening. It's become a pattern, and I'm concerned because really tight follow-through is crucial for success in this job. Can we talk about what you think has been happening and what you can do differently going forward? If you don't see the improvement you need after that, then in most cases, you'd move to addressing the issue as a serious performance problem and possibly a fit for the role issue. But often just naming the pattern can help the person get back on track or figure out what help he might need to do that. 2. Asking someone to stop socializing at work so much. Some socializing in an office is a good thing. Employees who get along well are more likely to work together effectively. And most people need small breaks during the day, so some amount of chatting is normal. Most important, if someone is a good employee who gets good results in her work, micromanaging how she spends her time can be demoralizing and counterproductive. In general, you want to err on the side of trusting people to manage their own time as long as the work is getting done and done well. But if you manage someone whose chattiness is a problem, either because it's hindering her own productivity or because it's distracting other people, at that point, you have to say something. If you think the socializing is impacting the employee's own productivity, talk about your productivity concerns, what things aren't getting done as quickly as you'd like, and then say, I've noticed that you spend a fair amount of time chatting with coworkers, and it's pulling your focus away from work. That might be part of the problem. Can you cut back on that and see if it helps? If the socializing is distracting others, I've noticed that you're spending a fair amount of time chatting with Isabel during the day. I know that you're good at managing your workload, and I don't have concerns about your productivity. But that much chit-chat in the office can be distracting to other people. Can I ask you to cut back on it for that reason? 3, your employee is spending too much time on social media during the workday.